Hello and welcome to an episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Rethink Possible explores pockets of awesomeness taking place in school districts as told by school district leaders. I'm Bob McDowell, your host. Let's dig in. Welcome to another episode of Rethink Possible. Today I have the pleasure of talking with Christine Nassario, who is the superintendent of North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale Schools, District 622, here in the Twin City metro area. Thanks for being with me today, Christine.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So when you and I talked, you mentioned that you have been working on something you're calling operationalizing organizational culture. And that seems super exciting. And I think it's something that other superintendents or people getting into the superintendency would have a real interest in learning about. So I want to dig into that, but maybe before we begin, you can give folks just a little bit of how long you've been in 622 and something about you.
Sure. Okay. So I'm Christine Tucci Osorio. You can call me Christine or Christine Osorio or any of the above. I am the superintendent of North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale District 622 in the East Metro. And I have been, this will be my 10th year here as superintendent. Prior to that, I was in St. Paul schools for about 19 years in many, many different roles. Teacher, assistant principal, principal, assistant superintendent, chief academic officer, lots of hats. So,
all of it.
Yes, exactly. And so I am also a proud mom of four adult children and live in the East Metro myself. And I'm very passionate about public education as a whole. I often say that it's not about just my own district. It's about making sure that we're all contributing to the broader issues of public education here in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. And I think that fits really well with the topic you want to talk about today, because if we, and I think we do, agree that leadership is culture, culture is leadership, and if there's one thing about school organizations that is so significant is how do you build a culture that not only people appreciate, but people want to stay with and people want to come to.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if you can help us dive into what do you mean by operationalizing organizational culture?
Sure. Well, I'll say one of the things, as superintendents, one of our most important jobs is hiring good leaders, right? And so one of the things you'll hear me talk about all the time, and my staff here hear me talk about this all the time, is when I'm looking to hire somebody for a leadership role, whether it's a principal, a cabinet level leader, a supervisor of transportation, what have you, if they're going to be in charge of other people, I care more than what your own existing supervisor has to say about you. When I think about references, I care what people who reported to you have to say about you. Because if people aren't following you, you aren't leading. And so one of the most important things, you've often heard it said, people don't quit jobs, they quit bosses, which is entirely true. I would argue they also quit communities if they don't feel welcomed and valued and heard. And so the most important thing I would say first and foremost is making sure we make the right choices in who we hire. We all know it's important to have diverse perspectives on an interview team and all of that. And I always challenge people, don't just call the references that are listed. Many times, get some more intel. I often work with my teacher union and I say, hey, this person's applying for a position. If it's public that they're applying, try to find out how the teachers felt about that person when they worked for them. Do people respect that person? Do they want to work for that person? Do they value their feedback that person gives them? So that's really a key. And I would argue one of the most important ingredients to building a positive culture is that you've got to make sure you've got people who really respect everyone within the organization. If somebody's personality changes, depending on who they're talking to, their personality characteristics should be no different if they're talking to the custodian who's cleaning their office or the mayor of your local municipality. If those things aren't lining up, then you need to question somebody's character and probably ability to build trust within the organization. And so I would say that's the very first thing we spend a lot of time talking about. Everyone's got to check their egos at the door, and we work for the folks on the front lines. They don't work for us. So be making that clear.
So when you're doing that, if we back up a little bit, what does that look like from your perspective to implement that with the people you're supervising?
Well, I often use this analogy about this old Indian proverb about the blind man and the elephant, right? None of us can ever see an entire organization in one view. We all have our own perspective. Even as a superintendent, I have a perspective. And that in this old analogy, in this old proverb, the person at the back of the elephant says it feels like a snake. The person on the side who's blind says, no, it's a wall, right? So our perspectives all matter. And if we communicate together and gather multiple perspectives, we can get a better image of what that elephant really looks like, even if we can't see it. You can't see culture, right? So how do you measure it? And I think one of the most important things is to make sure we're checking lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of perspectives. And I often tell folks, because, you know, people know they can talk to me, bus drivers, whomever, can share their thoughts and feelings. And I like their perspectives because I want to know, how are you experiencing this organization? And what do you need me to know as a leader? Now, I don't want to go around and undermine people who are in middle management who are supervising other folks. It's not about that. It's about really looking in the mirror. If this is your experience, what am I not doing to make that stronger for you or what have you? And the way to do that is lots and lots of perspectives. And I mean student perspective, families, stakeholders, employee groups. You can do them through all kinds of ways. Surveys, focus groups, roundtables. People often do exit interviews. We're doing stay interviews. Why do you stay here? Especially among leaders of people of color who are working in our team or others who've just been in it a long time. Why do you stay? What makes you want to come back every year? And so the only way we can have the best vision of how we're doing and measurement of how we're doing is by getting lots and lots of perspectives. None of us can ever see the whole system, ever. So that's a big key ingredient to all of that. And so when you talk about, even like I said, hiring leaders, making sure that we're getting perspectives from those above and below them in organizational systems prior to coming to our system. So I think that's a key ingredient as well. And then there's other strategies we work on to try to strengthen trust once we have people on board and in the system too, but making sure there's avenues for people to share their perspectives. In many situations, too often, people are gatekept by their direct supervisor. We all know that, right? Your direct supervisor could be the be-all end of whether you get a promotion, whether you have strong references. And I think we have to be smarter about how we look for talent, because if one person has a negative thing to say and they happen to be your direct supervisor, well, that's a lot of power for that person. And I would argue, let's make sure we get different perspectives as well, so that we're not perpetuating this sort of, you know, network of promoting our friends and colleagues rather than people who might challenge us to actually be better at our jobs.
So the idea of then culture, right? So you brought up the different perspectives. If we look at your leadership team and what they're doing and what you expect of them, what does it look like to operationalize and to create clarity for your leaders around what you expect that relates to what you just said?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, one of the strategies that I use most often, and my principals and other leaders would tell you about it, I started using first when I was a principal with my teachers. So when I first became a principal, there was really high rates of suspensions. It was a high poverty school with lots of needs. And quite frankly, we had some pretty inexperienced staff at the time. And I remember as I was trying to, you know, drinking from the fire hose of trying to handle all these kids being sent to the office and whatnot. And I'm talking many, many, many a day. One thing I started with, rather than focusing first on what strategies we need for classroom management, I started first by meeting with each individual teacher when I entered the school. I printed out their class list and I had a one-to-one with each teacher. And I said, tell me about this student. Tell me about this student. Who do they live with? Who's their best friend? Who do they hang out with on the playground? Where do they go after school? Do they get dropped off or picked up? Do they ride a bus? I just quizzed them on how well they knew the student. And I would make a note next to each one. And when people are in reaction mode and survival mode, one of the first things that goes away is taking time to know people, right? You're like, well, I gotta do something to fix this. And so unbelievably, and this was 20 years ago, but unbelievably, without any other intervention, our office referrals dropped by 30% within just a couple of months, simply because And a lot of folks didn't necessarily have the answers to the questions I was asking. And I said, that's okay. We'll chat again in a few weeks. And because and I use the guise of, I want to know these kids and I'm new here, so help me know these kids. But it also challenged those teachers to know those kids. Fast forward to later on in life as a superintendent, one thing I've done is a very similar activity. So I work with my HR director and I say, I need everyone to have a printout list of all their staff in their building. And we start with licensed staff. So if I've got a leadership meeting coming together and I've got a principal and three APs coming to the table, we make four copies of that school stuff. But we do this in a whole setting. And transportation gets a list of all of their people. Everyone does. And I do on the smart board this number, random number chooser. And so it'll be like number 13. Your job is to scroll down to number 13. And I'll say, give yourself a point if you know how far they commute every day. And then I'll be like, number chooser, number five. Go down to number five and give yourself a point if you know where they worked before they worked in your program, right? And you know, and then we go on further, like give yourself a point if you know who their closest confidant is in your building, right? Understanding those connections, right? And then we do a reflection activity where everybody has to think about, and I always say this is not a turn and talk about your staff. It's a turn and talk about what you learned about yourself. Because if you don't know your team members, there's all this research. People are not, like students in classrooms are not going to learn as much from a teacher they don't believe cares about them. The same is true in an environment where you don't feel like your boss cares about you. And so by doing this activity, and then I do it again, and you know, later on in a year, and they have to see if their score improved. And it's a reflection activity. But when we do this in a setting, we also, especially for school principals, then we do a second one with your non-licensed, your custodial, nutrition services, paraprofessionals. And that we compare scores. How did you do with the first group of licensed teachers and whatnot? And how did you do with the others? Inevitably, principals know more about their licensed teachers than some of their non-licensed staff. And so we do this whole activity to kind of measure, you need to know these folks. And so for some people that comes naturally, they are like, I know all these things. I'm very personable. I talk to people all the time. For others, it's a bit of a challenge. And I've even said, if you have to have a clipboard that you make a note to yourself when after school or during breaks, walk down that hall and pick two people to have a chit chat with. That's not about their job, just building relationships. And it can be the tiniest thing, but pay attention to who you aren't talking to, who you don't have a connection to. And it's really important. One way of taking it and operationalizing it is to take it to a leadership development meeting and actually what gets measured gets done. So when I ask these questions and they know I'm going to ask them again, you know, they're going to go back and work on that a little bit more. And so it's a way to strategize what I, you know, something that works well with teachers can often work well with adults as well.
Yeah, exactly. So let's dive into the system of this a little bit. One of the things that I'm finding is not necessarily consistent. Is, you talked about it, is the what gets measured gets done.
Yep.
And from a system standpoint, I'm wondering if you can talk about what you have set up for your ongoing meeting structures with your teams at whatever levels they are and the frequency that you meet with.
Well, within our organization, you know, I've got two assistant superintendents in my district. The only reason I can probably justify with just under 11,000 students, two separate assistant superintendents, is they also have other jobs, right? So one of my assistant superintendents over elementary is also my special ed director for all grades, right? And my secondary assistant superintendent is over all crisis communications and other programming related to athletics and communication with community resource officers. And there's a whole lot of other things under each person. So they meet pretty much weekly by Zoom with principals and other leaders. I would say one thing we're really focusing on differently this year is our focus on assistant principals, deans. Because if you think about my earlier point when I said, we can be the gatekeeper for somebody who reports to us. And there are those among us who do a wonderful job of lifting up leaders and helping them get to where they need to go next, right? And there are those who say, that person better not leave me. They owe me at least 3 years. My response is, we don't own people. We don't own people. And we need good leaders everywhere. And so really working on, if you think about, principals have a wonderful network, right? As superintendents, we all have our MASA network. We have we have our professional networks. Our HR directors have a professional network. Many times those caught just under those leadership levels are kind of stuck, right? They have their team in their building, if there is a team, but they're very much can be gatekept by whoever their boss is. And so we're trying to do some work around this to make sure they are really connecting to each other and even across districts with those who have similar roles. And one thing where that work right now is being co-led by my director of equity and an assistant superintendent and my principal of the online school, because she was an amazing assistant principal and she's just really got good connections to everybody. And so like, how do we make sure we elevate? And I said, our job is not to pour learning into them. Our job is to get out of the way and let them share, because I've got one AP who's amazing at master scheduling. And actually we use him to help train our others in the district. Another who's just unbelievable with truancy intervention and response. And so have him train others. It's about creating space and time for that to happen. And so I think that's what we have to really think about. Another thing we work on is everyone who's a leader in our organization really focusing in, and I do this during all of my check-ins with everybody, to say, where do you want to be in 3 to 5 years? How can I help you get there? What don't you have on your resume right now that you'd like more experience with? Because sometimes we're always thrilled when someone will stick around for a while, right? But people generally are going to stick around as long as they're something's still in their bucket, right? They're learning new things, they're building new skills, building their professional resumes, what have you. And so the more we can do that, the more we can actually keep folks with us longer, I believe.
The thing I'm picking up on, in addition to the operationalizing of this and the relationships, is going back to the story you told about discipline and suspensions. It seems like a very high level focus for you is this idea of engaging your leaders with you as the CEO, as the superintendent of the organization. There's a significant emphasis put on the level to which you are engaging, truly engaging with those humans who are also the leaders in your organization.
Well, I would agree. And so first and foremost, I believe, for example, your principals are the most important people in your organization as school leaders, of a school district. More important, I would argue, than cabinet level members. And I've told my cabinet that. They agree. I mean, it's true, right? I think too often people will focus too much when you're in the superintendent role on your cabinet, and not principals need to feel seen and heard and valued by you. They need to believe, I believe in flattening the organization, that their voice matters in every decision we make. At the same time, how do we build resiliency? Because, you know, as much as it's important that I have a connection to people, I'm almost more concerned that they have connections to each other, because that builds stronger resiliency. So many organizations are made or broken by the charisma of somebody at the top, right? And they walk away and everything implodes. But yet, if you can build connections to each other, there's a lot more resiliency. I've read some interesting research about, for example, when organizations or work cultures or communities feel strong connection to each other, they can handle trauma, difficult experiences, and come out better and faster on the other side of it. And so some of the interesting research in that comes out of like emergency room nurses, for example. If they feel a connection to each other, when things blow up on them, they can keep up and feel strong together and know that they're in it together, and they actually come through it faster and rebound faster from a traumatic situation. And so as much as, yes, I want, part of my job is to make sure that I am knowing all the people in my organization, but also making sure that others are listening to their perspective, not just me. It's not about them telling me and me valuing their perspective, although that's incredibly important. It's also that others are recognizing the gifts and talents that each other has. Because that's a way you build stronger resiliency. And especially with this labor market right now, where there's turnover and, you know, the days of people sticking around in one organization for years and years, I think they're gone. We have to make sure that we're ready for the next folks who come in the door behind that person. And I lost an amazing assistant superintendent this year to another district, and everyone was just panicking. And I said, we're going to be okay. Look at the systems that you guys all built with her. You know what I mean? Those aren't gone. You built those, not just her. And I think that's what's important, is helping people have that voice in building the system so that they feel invested in it at the same time too.
When you're in the throes of pulling off the operationalization of this, I'm assuming there is a communication flow to people, as well as some sort of a progress monitoring for yourself about how well is this going. Can you talk a little bit about what those two things look like for you?
One of the things I talk a lot about with leaders is, in the same way that a teacher ideally should be using the feedback they're getting from their students when they're teaching a lesson, that should be used in planning your lessons for the following week. Like, how well did they understand this? Do we need to revisit any of these topics? Do we feel like there was, you know, we're ready to move on to the next topic? But how do you progress monitor and measure and check for understanding, kind of a thing? By that same token, what we do with students, we need to do as adults. So I tell my principals, like, you should never have your staff meetings planned out for the whole school year, because that doesn't leave room in there for what happens week to week, right? And so making sure we're checking those things that maybe didn't go well, or things that surprised us, or things that caused us stress, or when work got bottlenecked. Anything we can do an after-action review. And, you know, in a crisis, right, you had an evacuation of a school or you had a weapon situation, there's an importance of doing an after-action review with that. We're often better at after-action review when it's a safety, you know, crisis situation. But when it comes to daily workflow, right? Okay, so we've had a lot of kids getting into hallway fights this past month. What are we going to do about that as a team? And get together with your leaders. Use the data to help decide what you need to focus on as a community. And you don't have to show up with all the answers, but you do have to show up and name the problem and say, all right, let's unpack this. Recently, I asked my HR director to compile kind of a summary of all of the employee investigations that she did last year. Because that tells us quite a bit of, like, what do we need to focus on to make sure? What types of them? Was it hands-on kids? Was it, not showing up to work on time? Whatever, you know, those different kinds of incidents, drug and alcohol related, right? So what do we need to do to make sure we get in front of that, right? And one of the interesting pieces, like, look at our data, right? All those things that feel overwhelming and keep us busy and make us feel like, oh, God, I can't keep up with all this. Okay, when you get a moment to breathe, look back at that stuff and figure out, how can I prevent that? The beautiful thing about schools is it's cyclical. We get a redo every year. So who else gets to do that? So one of the things we noticed was that a disproportionate number of our teacher employee investigations were with tier one teachers who have no educational training, right? So, you know, we give people these licenses and we throw them into classrooms, oftentimes high need settings, and they really don't have as much experience in the environment. So what can we do? We know that happens. If we're going, first of all, let's try to do everything we can to make sure we get higher trained teachers. But in the absence of that, what are we going to do to make sure we do a better job of onboarding new employees and helping people to understand some scenarios of, like, these are some things that can get us in trouble, and here's some ways to help, and here's how we can support you with this. But understanding, we often talk about looking at our data in terms of student achievement, right? Or course completion rates or grad rates or what have you, but we don't look at employee data, right? We, for example, when we build our school calendar, we look at, okay, what days of the year have we had the highest absentee rates? And we know the Fridays in May, right? Tend to be big ones for us.
Sure.
Could we put a professional development day or something else that can land on those days so student learning isn't as impacted? Or how do we maybe make that calendar? We can try to work multiple angles on that, but let's also look at the data and use that to help us in our planning.
Right. Mm-hmm. Related then to the data is your strategic plan. So what components are getting pulled from your strategic plan to drive the operationalization of this culture?
Well, I would say the biggest thing is how we built the strategic plan. Last summer, we did a rework of our strategic plan. And I'll tell you, The way we went about it was very labor intensive. We had many. Remember that whole idea of how do you measure everyone's experience with your organization?
Mm-hmm.
So we have all this quantitative data, right? So our achievement data from everything from early learning all the way up through high school and beyond. We have attendance data. We have all kinds of things that are easily quantifiable. But we also have a lot of qualitative data. And the way we did that is really looking at, first of all, who all our stakeholders are and having focus groups and surveys and roundtables and world cafes with students, with families, with community members who don't have kids in our school. What's your perception of our organization, right? Of those adults in community education classes. So all of these things, we even did like surveys of little kids, kindergartners, you know, I feel safe at school. My kids at my school are nice to me, you know, and we put together all kinds of different ways that we can measure everyone's experience in the organization, which took months of doing to really ramp that up. And when we saw that we were hearing disproportionately from certain majority populations and not enough from others, we did intentional outreach and hosting intentional conversations to get more perspectives. When we had that all together, we put together a huge, huge invitation to whoever wants to be part of the strategic planning oversight group. And we had about 70 people involved, students, staff, bus drivers, parents, community members who don't have kids in our schools, what have you, to really unpack all these different areas and through a really deep dive. And there's a lot of coding of qualitative data, right? Coding responses to help organize them and such. But really transparently bringing the raw data. We didn't synthesize it first and let this group dig into it. We gave it to them raw. We went through and, of course, blanked out all the names where it mentioned, you know, and whatnot. But people have more trust in it if it was an open process and anyone could be in it, right? And it was a very large group. So I think that's the first ingredient is how you build it in the first place. Mm-hmm. And then from there, those priority, we started calling them the big buckets, right? We spent a lot of time on what those buckets are and what those are going to look like. And every year's action plan is tied to that. So I think the most important thing with strategic planning is how you build it in the first place is most important in my book. And then you work forward and you have to have those, you know, feedback loops and cycles along the way to make sure that people are feeling like we're actually moving the needle on these things.
Yeah. Well, my final question for you is, if you were sitting down with a group of new superintendents or someone that called up and said, hey, I really want to figure out how to operationalize some good organizational culture in my district, what would be the one, two, or three things that you would say, okay, here's what you got to do?
I think you have to, first and foremost, I tell this all the time to people, we all have mentors. We've all had bosses that we've learned from, good and bad, right? And a lot of times you're stepping into a new position and you've got big shoes to fill, right? And you've had perhaps a strong leader before you or somebody who wasn't as strong before you. But I always tell people, you get to do it your way. Bring your own personality to the table. You can learn a lot from other people, but you don't have to be somebody else. All perspectives and strengths are welcome in these jobs. And the only way we're going to be successful is if we are who we are and we don't try to be somebody else. So that's it sounds simple, but it's a really big deal because I think a lot of people try to emulate someone that came before them and they may be good at that and they may not be good at that if they're not bringing their own skills and interests and talents to the table. The second thing is make sure you surround yourself with diverse thinkers, right? And so how do you make sure if you're going to really understand how the culture is working or not working for people, you've got to make sure you've got lots of perspectives at the table. And that one thing I had to work with is helping my team members to know, you know, if I have a sit down and chat with a bus driver, I don't ever want the supervisor or the bus drivers to feel like I'm not valuing their role and I'm undermining their leadership or any of that. So the way you go about having conversations with people at different layers of the organization is you make sure that you have integrity with the way you do it, right? If they have a concern with their supervisor and it comes up during a thing, well, have you talked to that person about that? You know, I often tell people there's three ways I can help you. We can practice how you want to have that conversation and you can go talk to that person. We can go talk to them together if you like, or I can talk to that person for you, but I'm not going to do it anonymously. I'm going to say this person had this concern because otherwise it's not helpful. So being really mindful as we try to connect with people at layers of the organization that we don't want people in the middle feeling undermined in that process. You know, they're part of the work and they're valued in that process. So I think that's really important. And I think you just have to make sure you've got lots and lots and lots of ways to get feedback from people on how things are going and how everyone's experiencing the organization. And that you're intentionally seeking all that feedback and input.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this today.
Happy to be here. I love talking about leadership stuff.
Well, and I think everybody likes to talk about it and hear what other people are doing. And this is really an important topic, I think, for anybody who's in a leadership position.
Mm-hmm.
So this, again, has been a episode of Rethink Possible with Bob McDowell. And today I've been talking with Christine Nassario, who is the superintendent of North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale Schools, District 622. Here in the Twin Cities. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.